That little leadership this morning, talk about the payroll tax, the extension of the payroll tax cut, and there is, you could have played a clip of everything they said that was true during that news conference and this show. If I had played it from the beginning of the show till now, the show would be over. That would be it. If you said the entire show is everything that these Republicans have said in the payroll tax cut debate that is true, will encompass the entire show, that would be it. Colonel Shaggy, well, I call him Colonel Shaggy, you probably know him as Doyle, is reminding me to tell you that I am not Leo Gold. I am Jeff Berg. I host Partisan Gridlock with Jeff Berg. That will be tomorrow at 3. So you can hear all this stuff again tomorrow at 3 o'clock. But for now, it's news, and we got to talk about it because this affects your new and your old capital. Don't worry, I cleared all this with Leo yesterday. All of it.
He's not tied
everything,
up in the closet.
I didn't say that. I said I cleared it with him. Let's be clear on what it is we're doing here. We're talking about new capital because, look, you've got, whether you noticed it or not, you've got about an extra $1,000 this year because of the payroll tax cut that was enacted at the beginning of the year. This is a middle-class tax cut. That is temporary, certainly is temporary, and that's fine. But with the economy the way that it is, you can't let it lapse. The recovery is very, the economy is very slowly starting to recover. We got some pretty good employment numbers today, and things have been creeping up steadily, but very slowly. And these Republicans in the House, anyway, are dead set against extending the payroll tax cut. And if you just look back very briefly, just to review a little bit of the history of this. First, the Republicans said, we don't want to extend it, but we will extend it if you include in the legislation a provision allowing the Keystone XL pipeline to go forward. This is something the Obama administration had said it needed to study further to make sure that the environmental impact was not too great. This is to take all that oil from Canada and bring it down here to the Gulf Coast. And there are very serious environmental concerns about this pipeline. And the Obama administration said, look, this is not something that we're prepared to do right now. We got it requires more study. And look, you know, let's be honest. I mean, they were not going to make a decision until after the election. I mean, that was a political decision. It was. They don't want to upset you, the progressive base, and they didn't want to give any more ammunition to the right wing, saying that Obama is hostile to the politics of it. That's where it was. Then the Republicans said, oh, we see. We've got you Democrats right where we want you. So what we're going to do is agree to extend this middle-class tax cut, this temporary middle-class tax cut, on the condition that you allow the Keystone XL pipeline to go forward. And the Democrats and President Obama said, no, we don't want to do that. The things are not connected. Let's just extend this middle-class tax cut. Let's extend unemployment benefits to people who have been looking for work and have no other source of income. And the Republicans said, well, maybe. But what we want to do is hold 150 million Americans hostage. We don't want to do what is objectively in their best interest. We want to do what is in the best interest of the people who pay our bills, the rich, the top 1%, the corporations. That's what we want to do. And against his better judgment and against what they wanted, Obama and the Democrats agreed to a deal in which the Keystone XL pipeline would be allowed to proceed, would be allowed to go forward. And the Republicans agreed to extend the middle-class tax cut. So you see, I mean, inherent in this, and what is important to remember to keep in mind, is that the Republicans demand something. Throughout this debate, they demand that they get something when all the progressives want is to do something that is in the best interest of the middle class. Because being in the best interest of the middle class is not enough for the Republicans. That doesn't do it for them. Just because something is in the interest of the middle class does not get the Republicans' attention. And so, earlier, this was last week, the Republicans passed their own version of this legislation. I want to read you a little bit about what this legislation was. This was last week. The Republicans passed an incredibly partisan, ugly version of this legislation. Now, there was no deal at this point, but the Republicans, the extremists, right-wingers that now control the House of Representatives, passed this legislation that would, in fact, extend the payroll tax cut. This is just from the New York Times reporting about what the House did. The bill would extend jobless benefits for some of the unemployed while reducing the maximum number of weeks of benefits that a worker could receive. What the Republicans wanted to do was take unemployment benefits from 99 weeks to 57 weeks. Just take a minute to absorb that. This is what House Republicans wanted to do. They wanted to say to people, we know you're unemployed. We know you're looking for work. Too bad. We are not interested in giving you unemployment benefits, even though you're out of work, even though we make the cornerstone of our entire political agenda that Obama has failed to create jobs. Thus, there are no jobs for you to find, meaning it is no fault of yours that you're out of work. Nevertheless, we are going to restrict your ability to collect unemployment insurance. Take it down from 99 weeks to 57 weeks. That's what the Republicans did in their version. They did more. It would block certain, their legislation that they passed would block certain air pollution rules for industrial boilers and incinerators. So just strip away those environmental regulations, because that doesn't matter. You know, those things get in the way of job creation. That's Republican economic philosophy, theory. That's what they want you to believe. Now, what's really going on, of course, is that people who pollute the air, people in the industrial boiler and incinerator business, go to the Republicans and say, hey, you know all that money we've been giving you to run these campaigns? Well, now this is what we want. We don't want to have to comply with these regulations because it's going to eat into our profits. We don't want these regulations to go into effect. We don't want them to continue. That's what we want in exchange for our money. We give you money. This is what you give us. Remember, we're talking about an extension of a tax cut for the middle class. What do industrial boilers and incinerators have to do with it? Well, you would have to ask the Republicans in the House who passed that legislation. It would freeze the pay of many federal employees through 2013. Because, you know, federal employees, people who work for the government, they're not people with families. They're not people who have mortgages that they need to pay. And this is what the Republicans passed. No increase in salary for anyone who works for the federal government. So on top of the literally hundreds of thousands of government workers, state, federal, and local, that have been laid off over the last 2 years, those that remain have their pay and benefits frozen. This was in the House bill. Plus, just as a little kicker, they're going to increase Medicare premiums, because they don't like Medicare to begin with. They voted to transform Medicare into a voucher program. They voted to voucherize Medicare earlier in the year. And so that, you know, that didn't work out. That went nowhere. So this is another way of attacking Medicare. Plus, they wanted to strip $20 billion of spending under the Affordable Care Act. You know, Obamacare. Because insuring 30 million additional Americans who have no way to access healthcare other than through the Affordable Care Act just doesn't matter to them. That's not in their, in the universe of things that they care about. That was what the House passed last week. This draconian, ugly bill that they knew was going nowhere. It was a partisan stunt that they pulled so that they could go back to their teabagger base and say, we love America. Who's got the foam finger? Hold up the foam finger. We love America. Who's got the bald eagle on their shirt? You, sir, you do. Congratulations, we passed this bill just for you. We made sure that we blocked air pollution rules for industrial boilers and incinerators, because really that's what the country's crying out for, as far as I can tell. Everyone I meet comes up to me and says, you know, when you're talking about politics, I wish you would emphasize these oppressive rules that industrial boilers and incinerator operators have to deal with. That's really crippling our economy. So that's what the Republicans did. That is what they did last week. And Harry Reid said this is dead on arrival. In fact, it's dead before it arrives. It's going nowhere. This is a stunt. This is obnoxious. This is silly. It's ridiculous. So it went nowhere, as they knew that it would. I mean, nobody thought that that was going to go anywhere. Fine. Fast forward to this week, and the Senate finally comes to an agreement. All right? The Senate this week passed a bill which is no good. I mean, I will just tell you right off the bat it's no good because it's got the Keystone XL pipeline in it. It is a bill to extend for 2 months, just 60 days, 2 months, the middle class payroll tax cut. I don't like that. I don't think it's a great way to do policy. I don't think it's a terrific ending to this debate, but this debate had stalled. There were actual negotiations going on between the Senate and the House, between Democrats and Republicans, that would have resulted in a one-year extension of the payroll tax cut. But because the Republicans continued to insist on things like industrial boiler and incinerator regulation repeal, because they were focused on things like that, and because they want to cut Medicare, and because they want to strip Obamacare, as they call it, those negotiations went absolutely nowhere. But because people, these politicians, definitely do not want people to wake up on Christmas and find out that they're going to have to pay more money next year because Washington has ended up in this game, they came up with a compromise. This compromise was in the Senate, and not to belabor it, but it was a decent bill for what it was. It extended it for 2 months, extended the payroll tax cut for 2 months, and it included the Keystone pipeline, which is tragic. I wish that it didn't, but it did. Anyway, 2 months. Senate passed it 89 to 10. 89 to 10, the Senate passed this bill. John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, the Republican Speaker of the House, called it a good bill and suggested that the House would quickly act to pass it. Well, his caucus can't possibly have that. His caucus, his right-wing extremist caucus, his teabagger caucus couldn't have that. So they got to him immediately and said, oh, no. This is only 2 months. And by the way, we don't get to strip out all of these environmental regulations. We don't get to take out money from Obamacare. We don't get to demand that seniors pay more for Medicare. We can't have that. Better for us to let people's taxes go up. Middle class people who we couldn't care less about. Better for them to have their taxes go up. Because if you listen to what these Republicans have been saying, they're sort of characterizing this as something that's really not all that important. If you listen very carefully to what they say, and you will hear some of that here coming up in a couple of minutes. I got some audio of it. You will hear them talk about in a very dismissive way. Oh, this is not such good economics, and it's really not that big a deal. And, you know, it's not a terrific way to run the government, and it's not good tax policy, and on and on and on. What you don't hear them say is that failing to extend this would be a tax increase on the American people. And I will tell you why that's important. That is critically important. In fact, I'd say that's at the heart of this debate, because in December of last year, just 12 months ago, when we were waiting for the Bush tax cuts for the rich to expire, they were pulling their hair out, jumping up and down, talking about how allowing those tax cuts to expire was tantamount to a tax increase. But now that a middle class tax cut is about to expire, no, it's not a tax increase. It's, you know, just bad economics. It's not a big deal. But if you give us something that is demonstrably bad for people, for middle class people, we will give you something that is demonstrably good for middle class people. These are the folks that we're dealing with. And now that the Senate has passed this by an overwhelming bipartisan margin, 89 to 10, now that the president has said he is anxious to sign this bill, the Republicans in the House have dug themselves in, saying, we just want to do what's best for the country. We're not interested in this Senate bill. What we need to do is send all this to committee, where, by the way, legislation goes to die. You send something to committee and that's it. But they're saying, we're here in Washington. We're ready to work. And those Democrats have sent all their people home and they're not interested in working out a deal with us, but we're right here. We're so reasonable. We're just waiting for a deal. It's total nonsense. It's dishonest. And I will play you a clip of this little weasel, Eric Cantor, talking at this press conference this morning, saying something so immensely dishonest, I think it's got to be a record even for him. This, by the way, also because Kevin Brady, who is a congressman from Conroe, right here in the Houston area, he was on this conference committee. He was appointed to this conference committee by John Boehner. So he's still in Washington pretending to be ready to work out a deal with the Democrats and with the Senate. He has been among the most dishonest in this entire debate. I've got lots of audio from him that you're going to want to hear, especially if you live up there. You can go ask him about it at his next town hall. 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. Want your calls as well. Jeff Berg sitting in today for Leo Gold, who is being held at an undisclosed location as Colonel Shaggy Doyle, as you know him, suggested much earlier. He also is standing by, Doyle that is, ready to tell you about traffic and weather.
That's right, Jeff. Well, we have two accidents to report on 45 North. One is northbound before Cross Timbers, and the other one is northbound at Cavalcade. And if you're heading north from downtown towards, Woodlands area on 45, expect some serious delays until about halfway to the Beltway. Also, there's an accident on Highway 6, northbound at Hempstead Highway. Not a whole lot of traffic to report there, but there's also a little bit of traffic building up on the West Loop by the Galleria. In terms of weather, it's gotten a little colder outside. It's been damp for quite a while. It looks like it's going to get down to 45 degrees tonight, and tomorrow's going to get down to 43. Saturday is going to be a 60% chance of rain, and it's going to get down to 38. And it's going to stay that way up until Tuesday. Back to you, Jeff.
713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. Jeff Berg sitting in for Leo Gold, taking your calls throughout the hour and talking right now about the extension of the payroll, middle-class payroll tax cut. And this is what I think is at the heart of this debate, is this incredible dishonesty, this cover, this pretext that Republicans are using to oppose what is a demonstrably good bill for the middle class. The double standard, the hypocrisy, and that they never get called out on it in the media. And here, let me give you an example. First here, because I told you I'd play this, let me play Eric Cantor. This is Eric Cantor this morning, talking this morning about where he thinks things stand. This is the Republican leader in the House of Representatives, clip number 14, Eric Cantor of Virginia.
It is our position that we want to make sure we provide some certainty to the working people of this country that the taxes are not going to go up for an entire year. Unfortunately, that view, although it is shared, is not being implemented or proposed to be implemented by the Senate proposal. And, you know, we're here and we want to solve the problem. And frankly, given where the parties are, there's not a big difference between our positions. It all comes down to the pay-fors, the impact, budgetary impact of the extension of this tax holiday. And so I saw the president out yesterday doing his Christmas shopping. I saw he brought his dog with him. We're here. He could bring his dog up here. We are pet friendly. And it will not take a long time. We could probably resolve the differences within an hour.
No, you can't. You couldn't do it in months. You're certainly not going to do it in an hour. But the dishonesty here is for Eric Cantor to stand up there and make I guess people in that room thought it was funny to say we're pet friendly up here. How asinine. Anyway, the dishonesty here is for him to say, oh, we'll just get this knocked out in an hour. We're the reasonable people. See, there are things that we want, and we're just looking out for the budget. That's not true. That's just false. It is a blatant misrepresentation about what has been going on, of what has been going on over these last several months. Republicans want to slash Medicare. They want to strip the Affordable Care Act. These are things that they're demanding in exchange for allowing middle-class people to keep more of their money, which they have said previously they're in favor of. It is deeply dishonest. Why did no one in the media ask Eric Cantor why Republicans demand something in return for a thing that is indisputably going to benefit middle-class people? When just last year they demanded that Democrats give them this tax cut for the rich, arguing that it was going to be this great benefit to the economy. How has that worked out, by the way? What effect has that had on these so-called job creators? I mean, it's, no one ever follows up on these things. It is absolutely astonishing they're able to get away with saying things that are opposite of what they just said, not 12 months ago. Nobody's got a memory for this in Washington, I guess. Here, as just by way of example, and just a little bit more history, when the Senate bill, which passed 89 to 10, arrived in the House of Representatives, Steny Hoyer, Democrat of Maryland, one of the Democrats' leaders in the House of Representatives, brought it to the floor and said, Mr. Speaker, we'd like to vote on this. What do the Republicans who control the House and control whether things actually get voted on the floor, what did they do? They literally walked out. They left the House chamber because the leadership was afraid that it would pass. And they were right. It would pass. There are enough Republicans who are sane in the House of Representatives to know that these teabagger extremists are driving them off of a cliff. And so it would have passed. And so they just got up and left. And you can see the video. You can go on the internet and see the video of Steny Hoyer standing on the floor saying, Mr. Speaker, where are you going? We have this bill from the Senate to extend a tax cut for the middle class so that people won't have their taxes rise by $1,000. Let's vote on this. Let's just have an up or down vote. No, they wouldn't do that. They left. They absolutely just walked out so they could go have a press conference, go have a photo op with John Boehner. Absolutely astounding. So in the midst of all of this, Kevin Brady, Republican from Conroe, went on MSNBC this week and said some things that are so completely at odds with what he has said previously. You know, he was appointed by John Boehner to negotiate some kind of a compromise with the Senate, as if they had some leverage left, as if there were some room for compromise. The compromise is there, as he already knows. The problem is he and the rest of the Republicans are scrambling so that they don't get called out for being the all-or-nothing extremist Republicans that they are. So here he is on MSNBC this week talking about what's going on with the middle-class tax cut. Clip number two.
You know, I don't think anyone in America believes Republicans are raising taxes, and I think everyone in America for 3 years has heard the president get up every morning trying to figure out how to raise taxes on anyone or anything he can get away with.
All right, well, the second part is just a lie, and Kevin Brady knows that's a lie. President Obama, the Democrats, cut taxes for 98% of working people. Kevin Brady, that's inconvenient for him, so he just lies about it. But it's the first part of the statement. Nobody in America believes Republicans are raising taxes. Just keep that in mind. Remember that Kevin Brady said that. And this is why it's important. Allowing even a temporary tax cut, just follow me here, allowing a temporary tax cut to expire. This is the principle, the overall principle. Forget we're talking about the middle class tax cut, just in general. The principle is allowing a tax cut to expire is the same thing as a tax increase. Okay? If you allow even a temporary cut in taxes to expire, that means people's taxes will go up. They'll revert to what they were before the temporary measure was put in place. That's the proposition. Now, why do I bring that up? Why is that important in this discussion? Because it was just last December that we were fighting over the Bush tax cuts for the rich, which were set to expire. Democrats and progressives argued, vociferously argued, that those should be allowed to expire and the top marginal tax rate should revert to what it was before this irresponsible tax break for the top 1% was implemented. And by the way, contributed to the destruction of our economy. I mean, just as a side note, not that that's particularly important, but you follow me. You see what I'm saying. Republicans said, oh, no. Allowing that tax cut to expire is a tax increase. That's what they said. allowing a tax cut to expire is an increase. Doyle doesn't believe me. He's shaking his head saying, Jeff, I don't think they ever said that.
No, I remember that.
I certainly don't think that Kevin Brady, the very same person who is on MSNBC saying nobody in America believes Republicans are raising taxes, he would never say something like that because it is so completely at odds with what he said last year, if he had said it. So clearly he didn't, right? Play clip number three. You know where I'm going with this.
I think clarity would help dramatically with our economy. I think getting the policy right, which is to not raise taxes on any class of citizens or small businesses, I think during the recession, frankly, or any time, just isn't a good idea. So you've got to get the policy, and we should have done it much earlier. And I just can't see how you jumpstart the economy by heaping higher taxes on the professionals and the small businesses most likely able to move us out of this recession. Families in those tax brackets have an outsized impact on consumer demand, and the job creators are small businesses. About 60% of small business income will be captured, a little more, by these tax increases, are where most of our jobs are created, or at least a good number of our jobs are created. So from an economic standpoint, you know, it's bad policy, and even worse, given the high levels of uncertainty.
So we have a contrast here. In one instance, allowing a temporary tax cut to lapse is a tax increase. In another instance, it's just, bad economics? A magic show? I don't know. You'd have to ask Kevin Brady, who lives up there in Conroe. Well, he lives in Washington, but he represents Conroe. Actually, he doesn't. Let me be fair. Kevin Brady is one of the few people in Congress, I will be fair to him, who has not moved to Washington, D.C. He stays here in Texas. I'll give him that and nothing more, because he is immensely dishonest and hypocritical on this issue. 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. Robert is on line two. Robert.
Hi, well, I was waiting for you to answer the phone, and I happened to look at the internet, and it looks like John Boehner has rolled, and they're going to allow a vote on the Senate bill.
Yeah, I saw that just before I came in, that the pressure had been mounting. In fact, Boehner, this is great, because Boehner got a letter from Sean Duffy, who is a freshman Republican from Wisconsin. Sean Duffy, of course, best known as one of the cast members of The Real World, and really made a name for himself in Congress when earlier in the year he held a town hall in which he complained about how difficult it is for him to support his family on the meager $174,000 that he makes as a member of Congress. So he had sent a letter to Boehner earlier today saying, look, let's just vote on this. Let's take the Senate deal. Let's cut our losses here. And the context of all of that is that even Mitch McConnell, the extremist right winger from Kentucky and leader of the Senate's Republicans, who has said that his number one legislative goal is to defeat Barack Obama, you know, because that serves the interests of the middle class so well. Even he issued a statement earlier today saying that the House needed to pass what the Senate had already passed. So, Robert, you're seeing on the internet that has now begun to happen.
8 minutes ago, Reuters reported that Boehner has advised the Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid, that he will set the bill for a vote on the two-month extension. Now, I was going to suggest to the House Majority Leader that if he's really all that concerned, as he says he is, that 2 months isn't enough, that it should be a year, why don't they get together and just pass a clean bill, just the tax cut, for a year? I'm sure all those senators will fly back to Washington on Monday.
I bet they would.
They could have a vote on Tuesday if they would just pass a clean bill without all the other garbage.
That's a great point. And because what they've been doing is using the time period as a cudgel to try and berate the Democrats, to try and beat the Democrats over the head, saying, well, you just went for 2 months, but we want to make it for a full year. What they don't add is that they also want to cut Medicare, and they also want to strip the Affordable Care Act and strip environmental regulations on top of everything else. But what you're saying is, and this is exactly right, and this is precisely what I agree with, pass a clean bill. If you care about extending this tax cut for another year, then do it for a full year and extend unemployment benefits along with it, because those are directly connected. And these are the people, these Republicans are the ones who want to do away, Make no mistake, they want to do away with unemployment insurance. That's their interest.
Well, you know, it seems to me like they could pass that before this afternoon. They could adjourn for the holiday. Harry Reid would call the boys back on Monday. A clean bill with the unemployment and with the tax cut would be, you know, before noon on Tuesday would be voted in by the Senate. And the deal would be done.
You know what would have, Robert, you know what would have to happen first is, in order for what you're describing, what would have to happen first is that Republicans would have to give a damn about anybody other than the rich and the corporations. So as long as that happens, then we can count on seeing some decent legislation.
You don't believe what he said about it being a one-year, it should be a year-long bill instead of a two-month bill? You're saying that he's not being honest with us?
My mistake. I apologize, Robert. I know how hurtful that is. I you know what? I was being mean and cynical. You're right. Let's give John Boehner the benefit of the doubt, especially that little weasel Eric Cantor. What a little weasel he is. But you got to hand it to the president and to the Democrats. They finally seem to have gotten the memo that if you play this strong enough, you play it right, then these teabaggers will fold like a cheap suit, and it's a good thing that they did. Finally.
Well, I hope they learned this lesson.
I hope so. Robert, I appreciate the call. I hope you have a good weekend. I'm so used to being on Fridays only. I hope you have a good rest of the day and enjoy Partisan Gridlock with Jeff Berg, which you can listen to tomorrow at 3. It's a little plug. I'm getting some nods from the control room. Yeah, that's right. I can do some plugs. That's fair game. I am, by the way, Jeff Berg, sitting in for Leo Gold, who is not here. He'll probably be back next week. What do I know? 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. Taking your calls throughout the hour. Jeremy, Johnny, everybody else holding, I am going to get to each and every one of you after we check on traffic and weather with Doyle.
Hey, Jeff. Okay, we've got an accident on 45 North, northbound at Cavalcade. And if you're headed north on 45, there's a lot of traffic all the way really out there towards like 1960 area. So watch out for that. And if you're on the West Loop, there's quite a bit of traffic. If you're on 59 headed north into town, there's quite a bit of traffic as well. And there's a little bit headed southbound right there at that 610 West Loop intersection. Also, if you're headed south on 45 Gulf Freeway, there's been a lot of traffic building up past the Beltway. So watch out for that as well. Back to you, Jeff.
In that same interview, we did that clip a minute ago of Kevin Brady. That was on C-SPAN in December of 2010 when he was arguing so passionately that we couldn't possibly let the tax cuts for the rich expire. He goes on to say in that interview that what we need to do is provide clarity to job creators. You heard little weasel Eric Cantor make essentially the same point in that clip we played of him a few minutes ago. Clarity. If these job creators just had some clarity coming out of Washington and just knew what to expect, why, they'd be out there releasing this $2 trillion reserve of cash that they're hoarding. They'd be out there creating all kinds of jobs, and this economy would be booming, would be bustling. And that's the argument they keep advancing. And I wish there were a reporter somewhere who was able to access the internet, who knew what Google.com was, because then they could go to Kevin Brady and say to him, gee, Congressman, you know, in December 2010, you helped blow a $750 billion hole in our budget deficit, which you Republicans constantly tell us is so critically important to you. You insisted that we do that in order to provide clarity to what you call job creators. And you assured us that if we did that, that would get this economy back on track. Now, would you care to explain why, after that was done, we didn't experience this massive boom that you suggested we ought to be seeing? Why are no reporters asking him that question? Why does there seem to be such an attention deficit issue? I mean, that, it seems to me, is a perfectly fair question. That was the case they made. That was the pitch. You know, these right-wing Republicans pitch to the middle class, and they say, oh, if you just do more for the top 1%, they'll do more for you. That's the essential, that's the essential sales job that the right wing does to the middle class. If you do more for them, they'll do more for you. it's never borne out. Once it's agreed that that's going to happen, sure, we'll give another tax cut to the rich. Sure, we'll give up a little bit more of our benefits. Sure, we'll deal with a little bit less infrastructure. We'll suffer through a little bit more unemployment. Because you're telling us that in exchange, we're going to get more. We're going to put more in our own pocket. It doesn't ever seem to work out that way. So seems to me an enterprising journalist might ask Kevin Brady about that. Why his predictions never seem to work out. 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. Jeff Berg sitting in for Leo for another 20 minutes or so. Let's go to Jeremy on line one. Jeremy.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I really appreciate your show, and I just wanted to say all this hypocrisy that you're doing such a great job pointing out, all these lies, all these influence, it goes to the same thing that we're finally, thanks to the occupiers and other people who are raising the level of discussion, beginning to realize that we got to get the money out of politics.
Amen.
The politics is just ruining, the money is just ruining our country. It's our country's soul. And the one thing that people need to realize, keep raising this discussion, is if we can begin to imagine what the country can be like if we could remove money from politics.
Jeremy, you could not be more right. I don't know if you've heard me on my other program before. Okay,
yeah,
so
I listened to you. Yeah, you're right on about it. But man, it's just a level of discussion really needs to come up to where people can start to imagine what it would be like. Imagine Republicans if they weren't bought and doing everything for corporations. I don't think they'd know what to do with themselves.
You are so on the money on this. Now let's go back for just a second to what we talked about earlier in the show when the House last week. Yeah, and Doyle, by the way, sends me a message saying Dems too. And Doyle, you're right. You're absolutely right. We're not here to flack for anybody. Democrats and Republicans play this game. And I'm sorry that that's a hard truth, but that's the game. Frankly, many of them are forced into playing. It's not necessarily their fault. This is the system into which they're born when they go into politics. But let's use an example. Let's go back to what we talked about earlier in the show. When the Republicans passed last week, their version of the extension of the middle class payroll tax cut and loaded it down with all of this stuff that would benefit nobody except for the big corporations and the top 1%. You're absolutely right. What they included, as we said earlier, was repeal or blocking of rules for industrial boilers and incinerators.
Yeah.
Right? Now, how that's connected to a middle class tax cut is beyond me. It has nothing to do with economics. But Jeremy, directly to your point, would you not like to see what kind of contributions to these Republican politicians came in from those industries, from people in those industries?
Yep. Absolutely.
I mean, that what other explanation could there possibly be if we could only get money out of politics? Then look. Yeah. You can make an argument. If the little weasel Eric Cantor wants to get on camera and say, it is good economics to block air pollution rules for industrial boilers and incinerators, then let him make that argument. And let him not. It would be better. Let me just finish this point, Jeremy. I'll go back to you. It would be better for him. It would be better for that little weasel if he could go on the air and make that case and not have to have someone say to him, well, Mr. Cantor or Mr. Republican, whoever you are, haven't you received tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars from the industrial boiler and incinerator business? I mean, would it not be better for all of us if we could just make these cases on the merits? And it would be better for us. It would be better for them. Jeremy, I return to you.
Thanks a lot. Well, no, you're right. He is such a weasel, and I'm really surprised that there's not an esteemed journalist that just makes his day busy. I'm not picking on this guy, because him and a lot of other guys like him are just really tearing this country apart. Great show, Jeff. I'm going to let you go so you can talk to other people, but thank you so much.
Jeremy, appreciate the call. 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. Jeff Berg sitting in for Leo Gold, taking your calls the rest of the show. Rest of the show, whatever you want to talk about. I don't know. Maybe the House has already passed this Senate compromise. I doubt it. But it's possible they are rolling over. And right before I came here and got on the air, the president did a news conference just pummeling the House Republicans. And he used Mitch McConnell's statement about how the House needs to pass this as a cudgel with which to beat them about the head and neck. And that could not have been a better play for the President of the United States. It is nice to see him step on the supple part of their neck and press down. Johnny.
Amen, brother.
Yes, sir.
At the bottom of the hour, I heard you mention them flying back to Washington. It would be worth it to do that. And I thought, holy crap, a motley crew like funeral mortician McConnell and used car salesman Cornyn and Eddie the Munster Ryan and Little Weasel Cantor and Red Barroom Brawler John Boehner. Why don't we put these guys on Skype or some other kind of internet platform and let them stay in their districts the whole year instead of them getting inside their insulated bubble up there in Washington? If you're an unproductive member of Congress, if you don't put forth legislation, if you like to stonewall all the time, that qualifies you to go home to your district and participate on Skype.
Johnny, you're
good enough for reporters. Why not for them? I'm tired of
Johnny,
all the tax money wasting on them.
Johnny, I don't know how to break it to you. I hesitate, Johnny, because you know I love you. Say you know I love you. You know I love you. Even if you don't say it, you know
drop
I love
it.
You. You know I love you.
Drop
but I got to say, and I hate to drop this bomb on you, Johnny, but you sound like Rick Perry. Rick Perry.
Blow it up real good.
Rick Perry says keep them home in their districts. Rick Perry says let them work part-time. Johnny, you're starting to sound like Rick Perry.
Even a monkey, you give a monkey a typewriter, and if he lives long enough, they could type up something that might sound reasonable. So he could be a veterinarian, but at least he made sense one time.
You know what?
Doesn't qualify him to be a politician.
Kevin Brady, I want to say this about Kevin Brady, because he's from the Houston area. He was on MSNBC absolutely lying his ass off about the president and tax policy and being immensely dishonest, inconsistent, and hypocritical regarding what it means to allow a temporary tax cut to expire. But Kevin Brady is no dummy. And he's not. He's wrong, but he's no dummy.
He works for the dark side. That's his problem.
That's right. He sure does. He is a corporate employee.
If I hang up, I think we need to revisit this idea of outfits like the Occupy folks buying and selling for profit these foam fingers with the middle finger, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And also, how legal would it be for them to take those fingers in with them into Congress and shout, "You lie," when John Boehner or one of them other weaselly morons...
I got something similar. You know, I got something similar, Johnny, on that. Along those lines, you know...
I'm going to hang up.
All right, Johnny, appreciate the call. 713-526-5738.
Hey, Jeff.
713-526-5738, your calls throughout the rest of the program. Yes, sir, Doyle.
You'll never hear Eric Cantor like actually go on the news and say, "Hey, we're willing to extend these cuts as long as we are able to have this pipeline and deregulate emissions, you know, for, you know, big emitting industrial corporations." Why is it that the details are never included in the media packaging of the deals?
You know, I think it's because producers, not reporters necessarily, I think producers, news producers, think that it's too much information, that it's too complicated for people to get. It's a conspiracy of stupidity.
So you have to dumb it down to, we like taxes, we don't like taxes.
I'll tell you, when I worked in television, that was, I mean, look, it's KISS, you know? Keep it simple and stupid. That's
right.
And it's the lowest common denominator, every cliche you can think of, and every awful thing you think about the media and messaging, that's what it is. And it's sort of the Frank Luntz way of thinking. Give people a few ideas that you can say in short sentences with very small words, and ultimately they'll get it if you repeat it enough. And that's essentially how they think. But look, you read the New York Times, you see what's in this bill. You see that this bill contains not just an extension of the middle class tax cut, but in exchange, it contains blocking regulations to prevent air pollution from industrial boilers and incinerators. It contains legislation to strip funding of the Affordable Care Act. It contains legislation requiring seniors to pay more for Medicare. This is the Republican agenda. That's why Harry Reid said it was dead on arrival. Look, Mitch McConnell's no dummy either, and he's been through this before. This isn't his first rodeo either. He knew that this proposal wasn't going to go anywhere, that this is a stunt. The inmates are running the asylum in the house. 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. Jeremiah, on line one.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to. Turn on your radio, my friend.
I'm going to comment on Eric Cantor, or how to call him, whatsoever. What I think is, this guy, all he's doing is to get a job that John Boehner is doing. Because the more he pushes John Boehner off the cliff, the more possibility it is for him to be the next speaker.
So you think he's bucking for Boehner's job, basically. He's trying to push him out. It's a power play by Eric Cantor.
Yes, sir, because...
You give him credit for having balls he definitely doesn't have, but I will listen to the theory. I like the idea.
Because every time you watch John Boehner say something on the TV, you're going to see this guy looking at him with this cruel eye that's going to make this guy offensive, say he's trying to get a John Boehner to say, why should you say this? Why should you say this?
He's trying to get him to walk the plank is what you're saying.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? Like, it's a viable theory, and it wouldn't be the first time in politics that you've had an underling undermine his boss in order to ascend the ladder of leadership. Maybe that's what's going on here. I would tend to doubt it because I just don't think Eric Cantor is that Machiavellian. I don't think Eric Cantor is that smart. And if I may digress for a minute, as a Jew myself, Eric Cantor is very proud to be the only Republican Jew in the Congress. He, Eric Cantor, does real violence to the myth that all Jews are smart. I mean, because that guy just doesn't have it going on between the ears. And I don't see him as being able to connive that way. I don't see it. But Jeremiah, I leave open the possibility. I certainly think it's an interesting theory. He is, though, a complete weasel. You will agree with that.
I know that.
He is definitely a weasel all day long. All right, Jeremiah, appreciate the call. Appreciate the theory. It's certainly an enjoyable one, and I leave my mind open to the possibility. 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. I could not let the show go by without noting, if you've heard me before, if you've heard Partisan Gridlock with Jeff Berg, which, by the way, airs Fridays from 3 to 4, and which you can find at facebook.com/partisangridlock, just as a side note, if you've heard me before, I frequently make reference to the movie Braveheart. Yeah. Colonel Shaggy Doyle knows what I'm talking about.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. You will in a minute. These teabaggers, these right-wing teabaggers, who constantly feel oppressed and put upon because they suffer from the worst case of persecution complex of any group of white people in the history of white people ever. Everything is a travesty. Everything is persecution. Oh, they're so persecuted, and they're fighting for freedom. That's sort of their gestalt throughout everything. Anything they do, trust me on this, from now on, whenever you hear, read, or see anything that these right-wing teabaggers are pushing forth, put it in context and think to yourself, could this be explained by a sense of persecution? And you will almost always come up in the affirmative on that. Always. Just here, let me give you a quick example. Teaching creationism in school. Well, no. It's not an unconstitutional attempt to sneak religion into state-sponsored curricula. It's censorship. When you're prevented from doing it, it's censorship. We good conservative Americans are being censored. So we're being persecuted, we're being oppressed. Well, the reason I frequently make reference to the movie Braveheart is because those people in that movie, the Scots in that movie, were oppressed. They were put upon. They were occupied and tortured by the British, by the English. And if you see that movie, you hear the swelling music and this great inspirational speech that William Wallace gives to the assembled Scottish troops as they're about to face certain defeat at the hands of the superior English forces. But all they care about is their freedom. They're willing to go down for their freedom. And, you know, we sort of make fun of them for that. We make fun of these teabaggers for thinking that they're so put upon that everything is analogous to William Wallace. They are individually their own William Wallaces, fighting bravely for freedom against the tyranny that is the Barack Obama administration. Barack Obama's new socialist Kenyan Marxist utopia, where radical Muslims are in charge of everything. And you know what I'm talking about. You've seen Braveheart. Play clip number one.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
All right, well, right-wing teabagger Congressman Phil Gingrey of Georgia went full persecution complex William Wallace on Speaker Gingrich this week when, during a caucus meeting, he said to John Boehner, "This is a Braveheart moment. You, Mr. Speaker, are our William Wallace." What could be more perfectly analogous than the Speaker of the House of Representatives, who wields considerable power and influence, being the same as a man whose family had been murdered and his wife raped and tortured and ultimately was himself put to death for doing nothing other than struggling for his own freedom? It's really the same thing. It's exactly the same thing. John, line two. John. Wow, John's on the Texas Motor Speedway. I'll let you hold, John, for a minute there and get your stuff together as I go to JR. Is that JR or Junior?
It's JR.
JR.
How are you?
Good.
I'm not sure it's that useful to spend a lot of time diagnosing the Tea Party. They're out there, but there's been a group of people like that as long as I can remember, who felt persecuted and so forth and so on, and enunciated almost all the same themes. I haven't heard anything really new from the disgruntled right wing.
Yeah, Jerry, you make an excellent point. This is really not a new phenomenon. They've just repackaged themselves as the Tea Party now. And I agree. Where I disagree is in saying that we don't need to pay a lot of attention to them. I think they're a danger, a threat. They've always been a danger. They've always been a threat. These are just reactionary right-wingers, and we have got to defeat them on the merits every time they stick their heads up out of that sewer they live in.
Well, the problem with that group of people rising up and taking power and acting out all their fantasies, which would be really, really dangerous, is there is a political majority and a political establishment even that's much more powerful than those people. And the thing that disturbs me is the inability of the rest of the polity to conduct any reasonable business in such a way as to stop just moving the goalposts to the right and feeding more and more of these fantasies. The thing that disturbs me is, as I look at the Tea Party, they are a bunch of people who are far more dependent on government than the typical working class person. These are pensioners for the most part.
Oh yeah, keep your government hands off my Medicare.
Right. You know, pensioners who have pensions that younger people will never even dream of.
Right. And JR, I got to run. I got other folks holding. I appreciate the call, and I know exactly the point you're making, and I appreciate it, and I agree with it. The problem is these people are delusional, and they are the ones who benefit from government spending. They're the ones who get Medicare, but they are the ones whose predecessors, whose philosophical predecessors opposed the creation of Medicare and opposed every successful government program along the way. Social Security, which, as you point out, they probably depend on to a disproportionate extent. Well, it is their intellectual forefathers, if you'll excuse the expression, not the forefathers for being sexist, but the intellectual part for obvious reasons. It is they who opposed the creation of Social Security. It is they who constantly tore their hair out and screamed about socialism and socialized medicine and everything else. They are fearful, small, and I'm sorry, wrong. And that's why it's important, because they are still a force. There are probably 80 to 100 of them in the Congress of the United States, the House of Representatives. They must be fought. They want a debate on the merits. Let's have it. Let's always have it. Ongoing. John.
Hi there.
Hey.
Hey there. Well, I can barely hear you, which is okay. I just want to make a real quick comment some of these people, what some people say about what they're doing and all, is much like the Egyptians who kind of beat up the lady in the video not too long ago, but say, like, they're trying to arrest her for indecent exposure.
They create the problem. Let me give you another analogy. See what you think. They set the fire, then they run home, dress and put on a fireman's uniform and show up and try and put it out.
Oh, yes, which actually happened around Houston not too long ago.
It happens from time to time, yes.
Yeah, and it would be nice if the news media would comment along the tax break with these are the other items in this bill. Just give a quick list of them, and I'm sure people watching will say, huh?
Right. Do you really want the government to have the authority to allow these private businesses to just pollute to their heart's content? Because, you know, as businesses, their job is not to protect the environment. Their job is to make money. And if they make more money by polluting, they're going to pollute. That's just simple economics.
Well, anyways, I'll let you go. Your show's about to close off.
John, I appreciate the call. And will I talk to you tomorrow? Tomorrow, 3 to 4, Partisan Gridlock with Jeff Berg. Or I will see you on my show's Facebook page, facebook.com/partisangridlock. George, real quick.
Hi, yes. First of all, let me see. I'm a retired federal employee, and I haven't had a cost of living adjustment in the last couple of years. And that when you mentioned that congressman who was griping about his $100,000 plus salary not being enough, I don't know what his problem is. But
I do. You want me to tell you what it is? He is a greedy, selfish.
Well,
and then another.
Apart from that, obvious. But at any rate, one thing I did want to say, wasn't back in 1968 or so, didn't Nixon attempt to set up price freezes on all commodities that are across the board, and didn't his own people turn against him on that?
It's a good question. You know what? I can't say I know the precise answer, so I don't want to venture a guess, though it sounds familiar.
Yeah, because when they mentioned all this, I thought, well...
George, I'm sorry. I've got to run. Call me tomorrow. 3 to 4, Partisan Gridlock with Jeff Berg. Appreciate it. Leo, thank you for letting me sit in. Doyle, thank you. Stay tuned for the news.
Approaching the end of the year is like seeing a toll booth up ahead. Time to slow down and account for where you've been and where you're going. There are some things in life that make such a difference, they become a necessity. KPFT programming is one of those things. This is the final week of our quiet campaign. During the month of December, we came to you during our usual announcement time to ask for your help in reducing on-air fundraising next year. Through pledges at kpft.org, people like you are shaving hours and hours of future drives. But in this final push, your support will make a big difference. Give online to make your important tax-deductible year-end gift of support now. It's people like you that provide up to 90% of KPFT's funding. Donate safely and securely online at kpft.org and help this valuable, essential community resource enter the new year strong. Thank you.
Let's face it, most of today's media caters to our love affair with celebrities and show business, or it is driven by a corporate conglomerate's bottom line. That's why KPFT is an oasis you can turn to quench your intellectual thirst. For independent, trustworthy journalism, for diverse music and culture, for radio with purpose. These days, you can't take this kind of radio for granted. Now, more than ever, it's time to make a stand with your support of community radio. 365 days a year, we need you to keep this independent voice alive and well. Simply visit kpft.org to become a member of not just a radio station, but an oasis of music, culture, news, and more. That's kpft.org. Don't wait for a pledge drive. Visit us online to join now. This is KPFT Houston.